This is Keep Talking with Greg Rennie and Rob Reiford on Mind Body Matters.
And welcome back to another edition of Mind Body Matters. And this is Keep Talking. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do, is we keep talking. And
on and on and on.
On and on and on and on. And I've got to say, I've been trying to get this guy on the show for the longest time, but life gets in the way. We were supposed to do it back in September, and then, of course, my son passed on, and so it got bumped, but I'm so happy he's with us today. Old buddy of mine, we live in the same city.
Right.
I don't know for how long, because this guy is getting so popular, he might just decide to to move away from Stratford, Ontario.
Go Hollywood, maybe. Eh?
Or Hollywood, or something like that. Hundreds of thousands of people watch this guy's videos every week. Please welcome to the program, Brittle Star.
That was good. It always sounds good when you say Brittle Star. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Brittle Star.
Well, thank you.
It sounds, there's a growl. It just, it makes me feel very important. It matches my ego.
Brittle Star, or his real name, Stuart Reynolds. Welcome to the show, old friend.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here, and it's been way overdue.
And, you know, not to start on a down note, but by the way, my condolences. Your father recently passed away.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
How is the family doing, especially your mom?
They're doing, you know, okay. I mean, it's one of those things where my dad had Parkinson's and Parkinson's dementia, so Lewy body dementia. So it was a long road down. And then when it finally came time, it felt fast in that sort of week or two. But at the same time, it was like, yeah, there's only one direction this is going in. So it was one of those weird things in life.
And you had said publicly, Stuart, that, you know, you had lost your father almost years ago.
Yeah.
Just because that's the disease.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think that's the worst part about dementia, is that, you know, my whole line about dementia is that for those who have dementia, suffer from dementia, there's a period of anxiety, which is really terrible and really horrible. And they know they're kind of losing it. And you can tell that they're scared. And that's awful to think of. Once they get past that point, they're fine. They're absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. They just need to be taken care of. Then all the weight of dementia falls on the caregivers and the family. And yeah, you're right. And I had written a couple of times and said before that, you know, I essentially feel like I lost my dad 6-7 years ago, where I just couldn't talk to him anymore. And so when he finally passed, it was like, I've kind of been grieving for the past 6 years already, you know, so.
For our listeners to the podcast, let's go back, way back. How did you get started on this journey? Where did the Brittle Star name come from? Now, I remember you actually did music under the name of Brittle Star.
Yeah.
Prior to the Vines, prior to the the videos and all that.
Yeah, no, it started off, Brittle Star was a band name. It was back in 2003. And I got the opportunity to have some help writing an album. The weird thing I think of my generation who are involved in music, where you kind of sit around and wait for someone to tell you you're good enough to make a record, and you're waiting to get signed. You're waiting for someone to say, it's time to go, kid. And that, of course, there's still people don't exist. That time doesn't exist. So I got tired of waiting, and I secured the help of a musical hero of mine, Stephen Duffy, who was one of the founding members of Duran Duran, and wrote with Bare Naked Ladies, and produced and wrote with Robbie Williams, and of course, The Lilac Time. And he agreed foolishly while he was working on the Robbie Williams album to help me write my first record. And it ended up doing okay. But I remember at the time before I finished it, I was like, I was thinking about the marketing of the album. Because I remember I'd been told by a very successful musician that music business is 20% art, 80% marketing. And it's true. So I was thinking, I can't imagine anyone wearing a t-shirt with Stuart Reynolds on it. It's just not really, it's not an Engelbert Humperdinck unusual name, and it's not a cool name. You know, it's not like, Rick Springfield or something like that. It's not as cool as that, but still, I couldn't imagine it. So my eldest son, Owen, was about 3 and was reading a book about marine life. We'd read it before bed every night. And his favorite section was these starfish called Brittle Stars. And they're the ugliest of the starfish brand species. And they defecate through their mouths and they can see through their tentacles. And I was like, perfect. That's the perfect name. So I just crammed the Brittle Stars together and took away the S at the end. And that was basically how it started.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the origin of the name. How I get started doing the video stuff? That's just when you have nothing left to lose. There's pretty much anything you can do.
Let's talk about that, because at one time in your life, Stuart, and I'm going to say this was, time flies, definitely over 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But you had told me in the past that you nearly lost your house.
Absolutely. Yeah. We had the notice on the door the whole bit.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, okay. No, it was, things were dire. And yeah, it was, we'd had a business, an online business, web development and stuff like that for about 10 years. And it did really, really well. And then we were hacked in 2006, December 21st, 2006 at 1:32 p.m. Slight PTSD with that. We lost within about 48 hours. We lost about over 60, 70% of our clients. Then the following few months, we lost another contract in the U.S., which meant that we went from 11 employees down to just 4. And then eventually I had to fire everybody who worked for us, essentially. And that included my mom, who was our administrator and receptionist. But again, as I always say, though, I mean, she was like one performance review away from being fired anyway, so it was fine. We sort of limped along from 2008. For about 5 years, I would just do any kind of web stuff I could do. I would do some voiceover stuff. I could do that if I could. And it was just kind of whatever I could do to make the mortgage payment that week. That was it. And then the wheels kind of came off and it was horrible and terrible. And thanks to family and friends, we were able to, you know, climb out, at least get a little, our heads above water for a little bit so we can kind of find our feet again, which was good. Then Vine came along and I got involved in making videos on Vine, which was an app that made 6.4-second looping videos. And my youngest, Gregor, said, you should check this out. It's like a video version of Twitter. And I was like, cool. Maybe this will make me happy, because I was tremendously unhappy. And I remember watching, I was sitting at the lights downtown here in Stratford and watching, I was thinking about how I hadn't smiled and I hadn't laughed in ages. And I was like, this is not good. If I can't remember when I've laughed out loud, that's not a good sign. So I went home, watched some videos on YouTube, watched blooper reels from The Office, the American version. And I was like, man, I want to do what they do. I want to have fun. I want to laugh at least once every day. And messed around with Vine, got some good reactions, did a bunch of videos with the plastic Chewbacca doll. Because I didn't want to be, well, I mean, I'm a grown man. It'd be ridiculous for me to just make videos on my own while my wife is at work and my kids are at school. I can't just stay home making videos like an idiot. I need a co-star. So I enlisted the help of Chewbacca, and him and I, we got up to some adventures, and people liked it. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. And then fast forward to August 2013, and we did a video called Put Your Finger on the Screen, and it went instantaneously viral, the definition of viral, like hundreds of thousands of views in the first 12 hours, then millions of views in the subsequent 24 hours, and hundreds of thousands of followers right away. It was like a huge opportunity. And we were like, I don't know what this means. We don't know how to make money from this, but let's keep doing it, because this is success of some sort. Let's take it.
And that was the beginning. I remember that Vine video.
Yeah.
It was like there was a light switch in it.
Yeah, that's
it was
right.
Like, Yeah.
The whole thing was just based on the idea that if you could move the video on Vine on the app while it was still playing. So the idea was you move the video up and down. It looked like you were making me knock over drinks and knock stuff over and put light switches on and off. And it was a very simple idea, but it really caught on. I was just really fortunate, really lucky.
And Rob, you are in one of Stuart's videos as well.
That was during COVID.
Yes.
And Brittle Star was telling people to stay at home.
It makes everything sound cool, doesn't it? This is, you know, one of the things. I don't want to stroke your ego too much here, because it's, you know, this show's about me. This episode's about me. But I wanted to say to you that one of the great thrills and treats I have in my life is that no matter where I go, there'll be an ad somewhere or something on a radio or a TV or something, and I'll be like, that's Rob. And I'll turn to the person next to me in a very Canadian way where Canadians always turn and say, you know, that guy's Canadian. I get to say, that guy's from Stratford, and I know him. It's Rob Reefer.
It's the same thing that I do with you. I go, I know that guy. I know that guy. Like, I got to go back. I've got to go back. When you and I think we met years and years and years ago, but my first was at the high school here in Stratford, Ontario.
Yeah.
and you were teaching kids about media.
Yeah. 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 I'd done a couple of things. I did, I thought I might get into teaching. Cause I mean, when you're hungry and you need to pay your mortgage, you're like, I'll do anything. And it was, yeah. And OnlyFans hadn't been invented yet. So I thought maybe I should try some teaching stuff. And I got involved with the high school here. We did a song as a fundraiser for the school, which ended up being in the top 40, which was cool, called Summer Never Ends. And then the following year, I was asked by the school, hey, listen, there's a position coming up to teach a specialized audio video production class, both an open class and a specialized class. And, you know, if you want to apply for it, you've kind of got all the experience you need to teach this class. I was like, okay, cool. So I did that for a semester. I was terribly paid. Because I wasn't a qualified teacher, I made $75 a day, and it was a full day obligation. I couldn't leave the school. I had to show up at the beginning of the day, and I could leave at the end of the day. And it was, I loved the kids. I hated the politics. I hated just the silliness that would happen with the school's staff and teaching people and stuff. It was like there were some great ones, but there's lots of silliness. And I was like, This isn't for me. I'm just going to, I just have to abandon this entirely. But yeah, I did. I love the kids. And that specialized class that I taught, the grade 12 specialized audio video production, we did a feature film as our class project, which we did we premiered at the cinemas and got in trouble for because we dropped the F-bomb in one scene.
No.
But it's just for the art. No. It's for the art. And it was integral to the scene. And you know, it was each one of those kids that were in that class, I think barring maybe like two or three of them, all went on to media and entertainment production, which is great, which is really awesome.
No, I remember you having me in to talk to the kids.
Yeah.
I think it was about my old cartoon, Arthur.
Which was a huge deal, by the way. It was a massive deal for the kids that I was teaching. It was right in their age group where they had all watched the episode. They knew exactly who you were, the neighbor, the guy that smells like fish or whatever his character's name is. I can't remember.
Well, I used to cook fish. Yeah, yes. Mr. Sipple.
Mr. Sipple. That's right. Exactly.
You've done so many things. I mean, it started off with the Vine. Well, actually, it started off with your musicianship and then the Vine thing and then video after video after video. And you and I talk quite regularly. And the question that always comes up between you and I when I pose the question to you, I say, how do you come up with the content day after day? And it's every day it seems to even get better and better. Like, when are you going to run out of ideas, Stuart?
Oh, it happens every week. It happens all the time. Well, first of all, I want to address this, the notion of me, like, looks like I'm always doing something, just doing so much stuff. I think it's like if you're in a wave pool, you're not a great swimmer. And you're thrashing around. Eventually, it looks like a body of work. It looks intentional after a while, but you're just trying to stay afloat. Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff happening. I think one of the weirdest things that's happened initially, I would do family content and dad related content, which I still do. However, you know, I've been kind of pulled into like the news and current events currently, or it's like there's political stuff happening. And I've always hated politics. I've never enjoyed politics. But now it sort of feels like, I feel like I should probably say something about this. Seems like less about politics and more about morals and right and wrong and just not being a jerk. So, I mean, there's always something. The life is ridiculous and there's always something to make fun of.
So you've obviously got to prepare. I mean, you're a very well-read person. You wake up and watch the news every day and go, so that's one thing.
Yeah.
Where you get your ideas from.
Yeah. And then I think of obviously just being observant about the ridiculousness of life in general, like going to the supermarket or something. There's so many silly things that happen there and just seeing people out in the street and just getting all bent out of shape about things that don't really matter. And then conversely, seeing the people who are ignoring things that do really matter. There's lots of stuff to make fun of. And I think that one of the things, I mean, I've never really wanted to, I always enjoyed making people laugh. I always enjoyed comedy as a fan, but I never wanted to be a comedian or an actor or a comic or anything, or a satirist, which is my fancy title. But I've grown to realize that comedy is incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful. First of all, it's way harder to do than you think. At least that's for me it was, and I'm still struggling, as many people will tell you. But it's incredibly powerful at poking holes in things, at pricking the balloon of pomposity. It's a great unifier. It's a really easy and fun and gentle way for you to hold up a mirror to society and say, look how stupid we look. And then everyone going, ah, you know, you're right. That is really dumb. We should probably pay attention to that and fix that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm grateful to be able to do it. But I mean, that's, I think that's part of the thing that keeps me going is that there's work to be done, I think. And if I can help, I'll try to help.
Your latest book, A Welcome to the Stupid Apocalypse, mm-hmm. Survival Tips for the Dumbageddon.
Really? Once I come up with a title, I was like, isn't that enough? That should make people buy it, right? Don't you think? I don't have to actually write anything now, do I?
Well, I think it's interesting that on Amazon, they call you a social media darling. What's a darling?
You're looking at it, Greg. You're looking at it. I'm a social media darling. I just love the term social media. It's one of my favorite ways to describe myself because it's hilarious. As a 54-year-old man, it's an unexpected descriptor, I think. I don't think very few 54-year-old men are described as darlings. But yeah, I mean, it's just this, it's sort of a, being a bon vivant. It's a bit of a commenter, I think is the term I made up as well. And it's just about being observant and just casting opinion, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe when you get to a point, and this is true, and the audience might know this, but maybe when you get to the point of 65 million views on YouTube for a video, then you're catapulted to that status of darling, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I think if you're only at about 50 million, you're a vixen. You're a social media vixen.
I was just looking at your YouTube site today, and I didn't even want to start counting, but literally, there's hundreds and hundreds of videos there. But can I tell you what my favorite
I'd love to know.
It's got to be the one explaining Canada to the U.S.
Yeah, and that's the one with 65 million views.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was the
KFC.
That's right, yeah. It was explaining Canada Day to Americans. It's 2017. It was the biggest branded video in the world. We beat Nike by 10 million views, and their video had Cristiano Ronaldo in it. I was like, suck it, Cristiano. And mine was filmed in our backyard over the course of 2.5 days and with a cast of characters, local characters. And it took off right away. Like within 4 days, I think it had 35 million views. And it just kind of spoke to this idea of, you know, all the tropes, the Canadian tropes that we're kind of proud of, which are kind of silly sometimes. And of course, things like, I mean, obviously things like butter tarts and poutine and all that kind of stuff, but then also mentioning milk bags and then being told by 2/3 of the country, we don't all have milk bags. We don't all have milk bags, you know. Everybody calm down. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You see, I know Stewart's backyard and I'm looking at the way he set up the shot. And as you said, it took about 2 days to put this thing together. Not to mention, I talked to you about this yesterday, Stewart, but our old dramatic arts teacher was in that video
as
well.
Yeah, Ron Dodson. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the guy with the white lab coat on. He's the doctor. But I mean, brilliant. It was just brilliant. And again, I don't know how you do it day after day coming up with all these ideas.
One of the funnest things about that video to me is that I wrote that script before it was an ad. And I was like, we were down in Anaheim at VidCon, this conference thing. And I was shopping it around to just agencies just in case. I was like, well, maybe there's someone out there like a Tim Hortons or something that was thinking, who's thinking this would be good to have or something. And I got a contact from this agency, really huge global agency, by their Canadian office. And they said, would you be interested in converting this script into an ad for KFC? And I remember thinking and saying, doesn't the K stand for Kentucky? You know how Canada's spelled, right? It's not Canada Fried Chicken with a K. And he's like, no, trust me. I'll tell you the most Canadian thing ever about KFC. And that's that Colonel Sanders spent the last 15 years of his life in Mississauga and essentially died in Mississauga. And I thought, there is very few things you could do more Canadian than dying in Mississauga. There are very few things. So I thought, this is perfect. I can run with that.
What is your favorite video? If you had to go back through...
I know exactly what it is. I made a video called Urologist, the movie, and nobody liked it except for, and this is no joke, the Urologist Association of America, who played it at their conference.
No way.
They were super excited about it.
I'm not familiar with that video.
It's essentially, I did it like a film noir, sort of like a very black and white Cat in a Hot Tin Roof type style, where yeah. I'm in like a undershirt and I'm by the window and I've got a glass of whiskey and there's like this, you know, music playing, which is very Cat in Hot Tin, sort of like sultry, sort of like somberish sort of music, sizzly music. And I think the line is something like, that's the dream, isn't it? Looking at wieners all day. And then off camera, there's a kid's voice, which is just me pitched up going, but daddy, and he goes, I said, it's just a dream.
And they played that.
Yeah, they all
have
loved
that
it.
Kind of sense of humor.
They have a great wow. sense. If you're looking at wieners all day, you got to have a sense of humor. I mean, there's got to be some funny ones in there, right? Right? There's
got to
be.
Oh, man.
I feel like the silence in this room is based on the fact that I've hit a nerve for both of you. Listen, you're both fine. Don't worry about it. You're going to be okay.
Well, it was like, what was the video we were talking about just before we went to air today? It was regarding Fast Health, which was a series yeah. you were. And this guy, Stuart Reynolds, got a chance to drive a Ferrari, for goodness sakes.
God, yeah. Yeah, I did a series called Fast Health with a production company called North of Now in Vancouver and in conjunction with TELUS Health Fund, TELUS Media Fund, not directly related to the Pay Your Doctor Fund, which is good. I need to just clarify that now these days. but it was great. It was essentially, the idea was a show like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, except it would be me in supercars talking to people about men's health, because the car is a safe space. And if the conversations happen in a car that don't happen anywhere else. And
that's true.
It's very true. It's super, especially for dudes and cars and stuff like that. I think you need to kind of the core of the actual conversation has to be incidental to what you're doing. And which is driving cars and talking about how cool they are. But yeah, I got to drive a Ferrari, Lamborghini twice, Aston Martin, Jags, the Teslas when they all came out. And it was super cool. Driving a McLaren, that was my favorite. Driving the McLaren up and down Grouse Mountain, that's all right. That was pretty cool.
I just remember, and again, I can't unsee it, but there was Stuart sprawled out over a bed. If anyone remembers the old George Costanza from Seinfeld when he was getting his photo, and basically all he had on was a pair of underwear.
Yeah.
That was basically the thing that I just can't get out of my mind of Stuart now.
Well, I think a lot of people feel the same way, Rob. That episode. As I was saying, that was the first episode we filmed for the Fast Health series, and it was in a hotel in Vancouver on Robson Street. And the hotel was fine, but it wasn't a fancy hotel. Let's just say that. And it was me and there was five crew members, lights, cameras, me in a towel on the bed and two housekeeping women at the door going, is it safe to come in yet? No, not yet. Give us a couple more minutes. We'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Don't ask questions.
Oh, dear.
Earlier, I was saying, speaking about wieners, because I thought, Rob, you would go right into that video you did in the Ferrari with a sex therapist.
Yeah.
And literally, I learned a lot about grip.
That's right. You don't want it dry.
No, you don't want it dry.
You don't want it dry.
And you don't want to grip too tight.
No, that's the key. That was such a weird conversation. I loved that conversation so much because, first of all, it was one of my favorite cars, a Ferrari 450 or whatever it is. And it was just such a frank. I mean, what's the title of it? She's a sexologist or something like that.
Sex therapist.
Sex therapist. Yeah, yeah. And it's so matter of fact. And it's so just like, here's the deal, man. And I was like, cool. This is great.
You've done it all, Stuart. You've done it all.
Nothing's off the table.
Were you uncomfortable with that topic?
When it comes to me, nothing.
You seem comfortable with
nothing's off the table. Nothing's off the couch. Nothing's off the kitchen counter, wherever you want to go. No, it was. I mean, it was initially a weirdly uncomfortable in that I was like, oh, I wonder if I'm going to lose brand deals because of this. But then I thought the value of the information superseded any concerns about that. And I could argue my case quite well and say, gee, are you saying people shouldn't know this stuff? Because there was nothing horrendous in the conversation
at
all.
No, there isn't. No.
But it was all just that weird stuff that everyone gets kind of giggly about. And it's like, let's just talk about it and drive this cool car. That's awesome.
I actually, watching it, I'm going, wow, like you cease to amaze me.
Well, thank you.
You'll talk about anything. You'll do anything.
I will do. I'm shameless. That's one of my guiding mottos in life is shameless because shame don't pay.
I got to ask you a question. Let's get back to the book because I really want to plug your book and you're saying about being shameless. You approached Ryan Reynolds to write the foreword to your book. And he did.
He did.
But one thing in the other interviews I haven't caught is that how you got to the point of reaching out to him and what else was said in that email other than what he said in the foreword.
Well, I'll tell you, this is a good ego stroking story for me. No relation to the sex episode of Fast Health.
Or grip.
Yeah. Any kind of grip on this is fine. It's totally fine. I saw that he had followed me like a number of years ago on Twitter, Ryan, and then he DM'd me. And I got a DM and I was like, oh, okay. And it's from Ryan. And back in the days when you could verify that kind of thing on Twitter. And he said, his message was, do you like gin? Can I send you a case of gin? If you don't, in which case can I send you a case of gin? And I said, I love free gin. That's my favorite kind of gin. And so he sent a case of Aviation Gin, which was awesome. And
that's his brand.
Yeah, that's right. That's the brand that he sold recently, but still kind of involved with. And we ended up chatting back and forth. And one of the hilarious, like, it was just surreal because it's, first of all, the world's going through this horrendous pandemic. We're doing lockdowns. It was all terrible and horrible. But I'm sitting in my family room chatting with Ryan Reynolds. And he's saying, hey, listen, if this thing clears up next March, me and Blake are going to be in Toronto. Do you want to go for dinner? And I said to Shannon, I was like, oh, that sounds great. And I said to my wife, Shannon, you know, Ryan has just invited us to dinner next March if things clear up. With him and Blake. And she was like, absolutely not. There's zero chance that I'm going to sit across the table and eat food in front of Blake Lively. That's just not happening.
I can do it with Ryan, but not
exactly.
With Blake.
Yeah. So that kind of just started a back and forth. And he's a lovely guy. One of my short stories was optioned to a film company and I asked him advice before the meetings and stuff. And he spent half an hour on the phone with me, just like giving me different advice and tactics, and not tactics is the wrong word, but different insights basically that he had had selling projects and what he sticks to sort of guide his projects. And he's you know, it's funny because when he called up, he's like, hey, it's Ryan. It's like, yeah, no, I can tell immediately. I know exactly it's Ryan Reynolds. But he's a super nice guy. He's incredibly, incredibly nice. And then I just asked him to do the book.
He comes across that way.
Yeah.
He comes across the way. So it's great to see that he really is.
Yeah. And he was like, he kind of bought into, because I mean, for those who have the book, there's kind of a bit of a joke to the, there's a foreword by Ryan. There's a middle word by Mary Trump, Donald's niece, or my favorite Trump. And and then the afterword by Colin Mochrie. And they all kind of understood. I was like, here's the kind of arc and kind of joke I'm kind of going for. And they're like, absolutely, not a problem. So they were all great.
You've had a chance to meet so many people over the last 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. You've been invited to the White House.
Yep.
You recently sat down with, our prime minister in Canada, mm-hmm. Justin Trudeau.
You couldn't find his name.
I'm just fishing for his name. The one person in Canada who's not sick of him yet, Rob, because he can't remember his name.
Yeah, I was going to say Pierre Elliott Trudeau, but no, I had to think about that for a second. You had a chance to meet some amazing people. The Property Brothers, for example, too.
Yeah, the Property Brothers are great. I did some social stuff with them for about 4.5-5 years, and met them in Toronto at the Digi Awards, the Next Media Now conference, and they're just cool. I've learned so much from those guys. It's incredible. Like, just so many business things I picked up just by working with them. There's a lot of times in my life I can sort of point to successes and think the reason I'm successful is because I did what Drew did or what Jonathan said, you know, like I followed what they're doing, what they're saying. And they're super great guys. They're really, really great and incredibly hardworking, like incredibly hardworking.
This show, of course, is called Mind, Body, Matters. And we want to know, Stuart, what does the mind-body connection mean to you?
I mean, I think the first thing that pops in my head is a very literal interpretation of the mind-body thing, in that I've known for a long time, rediscovered during the pandemic, and that is if I any sort of exercise I do calms my head. So that means half an hour on the treadmill. That means 20 minutes on the treadmill even. And that's not running. That's just walking at a good clip. That's it. And I'm listening to music. I'm maybe doing emails. But it's just like my body's in motion. And every time I finish that process, it feels like, okay, my head's a little bit more clear. It feels like when you do What is it when you do those things, experiments in public school with a magnet? You know, you could scribble it all up and it would be like that it wouldn't work. And then you could like stroke the, again, no relation to the Ferrari episode.
This has nothing to do with grip.
No, it doesn't matter how you grip the piece of metal. You just stroke it in a repeated parallel pattern and it becomes magnetized again. It regains its power. And that's kind of the analogy I can think of is with some mild exercise for me is that mind body connection is like, if I'm a bit scrambled in my head, I can exercise for a bit. And then at least for a good couple hours afterwards, I'm like, all right, I've got a better grip on what I need to do and where I'm standing currently and how I can move forward.
Can we go back? I'm going to say, Stuart, it was about 5 years ago and you were rushed to hospital. What went on there?
Yeah, I was in Vancouver and I was there to speak at a conference and I had been the week leading up to it, I'd been feeling terrible, but there was a tremendous amount of things up in the air. There was lots of things happening at the time work-wise. There was lots of potential work things happening and not happening, which is added to a little bit of a stress.
Anxiety?
Anxiety, essentially. And I thought to myself, maybe I'm you know, maybe I've just got the flu or cold or something like that. Maybe I've just got something, a virus or something like a norovirus or something terrible like that. And flew to Vancouver, felt like hell and went to sleep in the hotel, got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and thought, nope, I think I'm dying. I think I am dying. I don't know what a heart attack feels like. It doesn't, I don't think it feels like this, but I don't feel good. And waited it out until 9 o'clock in the morning. Which was horrible, and then drove to a medical clinic in Vancouver, and the doctor, as they referred to, said to me, took my blood pressure, and then he took it again. He took it five times, and he said, did you drive here yourself? And I went, yeah, why? And I was feeling okay-ish at that point. Like, it's sort of the new normal had kicked in. And he's like, your blood pressure is not good. It's not good at all. And he asked a bunch of questions. He went, are you able to drive to Vancouver General Hospital? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you should go there now, immediately. I'll fax over a thing. That's what they're expecting you. And they're going to run tests on you. So they did. And they were amazing. Both the clinic doctor and staff were great. And the Vancouver General Hospital staff were amazing. Right down to after a day full of tests at the hospital and ER, ECGs, all that kind of stuff. The doctor came to me at the end of the day and crossed his arms in front of me. And he had like a million people who had actual problems, right? They're like, legs are falling off and stuff like that. He had a lot of work stuff going on. I was like, yeah. And he goes, you're just stressed, buddy. Like, you got to find a way to chill. Just chill. You'll be okay. It's like, all right, good. Rested for a couple more hours. And then I was okay after that. I went back to my doctor here in Ontario. And he was like, you don't have any, your cholesterol's fine. You don't need things. You're just, your anxiety's out of control. Like, you're just stressed
out. Would you consider that a panic attack that you had?
I mean, if panic attacks can last a week, maybe. But I think really what it was is I just was building up stress and not venting it in any way. I wasn't exercising.
Okay.
I wasn't, I was maybe like probably drinking too much. I was probably eating too much in compensating for like trying to drown out this feeling of stress and to ground myself with all the stuff that was up in the air. But yeah, I ended up in hospital. I remember posting the picture when I was in hospital and it had the numbers of my blood pressure. And I'm like, oh my God, is that your actual blood pressure reading? I was like,
What were the numbers?
I think 197 over something, over 100 or something. It was like, it was crazy high. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, it was. And then it was, of course, it doesn't go down when you read. It's like, what does that mean? Well, it means you can get a stroke, you can have a heart attack. And it's like, ugh, that's not good. It was a big wake up call for me. And I keep telling, I know tons of other people who work in media who've ended up in hospital because of the exact same thing. And you really have to, and I say to my boys as well, like, you have to vent. You have to relax.
Express
your feelings. You have to, even beyond physical but mental, you have to choose a day off or your body will choose one for you, as the cliche goes. And so true and it sounds cliche and it is cliche, but that the reason is it's completely accurate. So every now and then, even still, Shannon will say to me, you need to stop. You need to just do nothing today or pick something you want to do instead of work stuff. It's too easy to get wrapped up in it. It's too easy. And thinking you could.
Did you find that helpful while you're on tour? Because following you in all those places that you're at and all the things that you're doing, the people you're meeting, that whole experience probably came back to you that I need to be very careful about something.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is what happened. A couple things happened. One is one of my favorite Leonard Cohen quotes is he said, when you turn 50, the brain cells that cause anxiety die off, which of course isn't true, but I like the quote. I think when you get older, they have more life experience. You sort of realize, don't sweat this stuff. Right. Like, who cares? This is so right. meaningless and transient. Who cares? And then I think that happened. And I think, of course, the addition of the pandemic happened, which made everyone adjust their expectations for everything. But yeah, I think one of my relaxing perspectives and the perspective I take to relax or to reduce my anxiety and stress is to say, it doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. You don't have to answer that email right now. You don't have to answer the phone right now. You don't have to go to this thing, do this thing right. There's things that you have to do in life, and there's other stuff that you've chosen that you have to do. And you if your health comes first, because you're without it, you're nothing.
One last question, at least from me here, Stuart. Why don't you like Nickelback?
See, this is based on a video I did. I did a series of videos right down to the White House. I did the first big one I did was myself walking up the laundry basket. I look into an open backpack hanging up on the wall. I drop the basket in horror. I reach into the backpack. I push aside a bag of weed. I push aside a handgun and I pull out a Nickelback CD and I go, oh my God. And then Nickelback's tune starts with Chad singing, how the hell we'd wind up like this. And I did a whole series of videos like that where right down to the White House where I was supposed to be I'm literally standing on the grounds of the White House. I'm like, please stand for the Canadian national anthem. And it goes, how the hell we wind up like this? Like, no. But I do have to say that, one of my favorite quotes ever is actually by Chad Kroeger's brother, who's, I don't remember his name, unfortunately, but the bass player in Nickelback. And he's asked in an interview, the interviewer said, you know, people say that all your songs are just formulaic. You're just using a formula to write these songs. And he said, yeah, it's a formula to write hit songs. I was like,
go ahead, jump.
This guy finally comes on our show and you say dick all about his book. I mean, really?
Yes, please go buy the book.
Why do you think he agreed to come on the show? He could be doing interviews with, you know, Fox News or something.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, maybe exactly. this is one way to get him back on the show again down the road and we can talk about his book more.
That's this. I see there's method to your madness.
Before we wrap up, I want to know more about your book. You've been on tour for how long for your book?
The tour wrapped up actually the beginning of the year. So, I mean, we're going to go back out and do some more stuff. The selling the book has been like working with the publisher has been an interesting learning experience. Let's just say I'm not allowed to badmouth them anymore, but if I was, boy, howdy, would I ever. So it's been well received. It was number four in Canada when it was released. It's been bouncing around the top five of political humor and humorous essays. And I've getting lots of lovely comments and compliments about the book and stuff. And it's great. I really, you know, but it is, the whole experience is wild. We did a book launch in the UK and the day it was launched, February 29th, it was unavailable in the country. So that was great. That worked out perfect.
No, seriously? It wasn't available.
I took an armful of books with me to the Lamb and Flag pub in Covent Garden where Charles Dickens used to go when he was starting out as a writer back in the 1800s, 1700s. I can't know. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Long time ago. And those were the only copies of my book in the country with the ones in my hand. And I gave them all away to eager people who were eager to receive them.
But do they have the books now?
You'd think so, right?
is the answer no?
They are, let's just say they're extremely they're very rare. Let's just say that. They're very rare in the UK currently. That's even after a visit to Canada House, which was I thought that would clinch it, but nope, didn't work.
Where can our listeners find your book? On Amazon?
Yeah.
Is it like Barnes and Noble?
Yeah, you can get it at all those places, Chapters, Indigo, Barnes and Noble. It's available. If you're in Canada and the US, you can pretty much, you have a fairly good chance of getting the book. It's on its third printing now, which is great. If you harass your local bookstore, if that's the kind of thing you're into, if you are impatient, just go to Amazon. And if you're really impatient, just go to stupidbook.ca or stupidbook.us and it'll take you to those pages.
You're starting to think about a follow-up to this?
Yes, yes, because the book advance money was so good. And I'm like, I would like more money. so, yeah, I have thought about that. I have thought about it. So we'll see.
you talked a lot about the U.S. and Canada, and that's sure. your thing. You're Canadian, and so you talked a lot about Canada, but you wrote that fine line from, you know, political humor that could be offensive and political humor that is like makes you kind of think and laugh.
Hopefully,
You mentioned that there's a difference, and I'd like to know more about that chapter from you directly, is that down in the U.S., right, they have freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. In Canada, we have freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. And you talked about in one of your chapters. Can you tell us more about what you see the differences?
I mean, one of the interesting differences, I think, between Canada and the U.S. was spelled out really, really well to me by a woman from Manhattan who used to come up to the theater. And I think when she told me this, she was probably about, I think, 86, 88 years old. And she was like classic fashionable with the big, huge black rim glasses and all that kind of stuff. And her pal would rent a limo and drive from Manhattan to Stratford each year, which was just crazy. But she described the difference between Canada and the U.S. as in America, America is like baseball. We're on the same team, but it's one person at bat at a time. That's it. Compared to Canada, Canada is the outfielders. Canada, we're all working together. We're all doing as much as we can. There's much more sense of community, which I think is very true. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, there's pluses and negatives to both sides of that. I think that, you know, there is an undeniable can-do spirit that Americans have that say, let's just get her done. Because I think that's spurred on by a lot of reasons, you know, economic and social safety nets and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, there's also one of Canada's biggest strengths is the fact that we are very community minded. Like we will do what we have to do. Like even when you think back to the pandemic, as much as there was a bunch of people making noise about it, we had a huge uptake in, you know, vaccinations and masking and all that kind of stuff. Cause everyone was like, I don't want to kill my neighbor. You know, I'm looking at it for me, but also looking at it for my neighbor.
Yeah. I find your book fascinating. I got to admit, didn't read all of it, but that chapter jumped out at me and I thought, wow, this is interesting. He sold these in the States. He hasn't pissed off anybody down there. I mean, you don't like trash Donald Trump or anything in this. You know, you talk about Canadians versus Americans and political differences, but you did it in a way that is attractive to both Canadians and Americans.
Well, I think it's, again, it goes back to the idea that comedy does best is holding up the mirror and going,
yes,
we're seeing this, right? Everyone's seeing this.
Right.
And it's not about saying you're an idiot or you're stupid, or I think we're all stupid and we're all idiots. But it's about saying, it's like when you get into a good relationship with someone and they have a piece of spinach in their teeth. It's like, hey, you got spinach in your teeth. Oh, your fly's down. Your fly's down. We'll go back to the Ferrari episode. Your fly's down. Your grip's all wrong. And
there we go again.
So then, I mean, it's kind of like you getting it. It's that kind of relationship that you want to get into where it's like, we're going to just deal with this and talk about it. And then we're just going to move on. We're going to have a good time. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Well, I think we should wrap up. We've taken up enough of your time there, Stuart, and Lord knows you've taken up enough of our time.
I've taught you so many things about your own bodies that you never knew before.
Yes, I know.
I'm wondering what song I should use, like maybe the Aerosmith song, Get a Grip, as we leave.
Stroke?
Or Billy Squire, Stroke?
I think that's a good one because it speaks to my high blood pressure and the episode as well. Yeah.
Well done, Stuart. Now listen, give my best to Owen, give my best to Gregor, give my best to Shannon and your lovely mom, Betty.
I will do. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it too, Stuart.
Thanks, Stuart. Nice to meet you. All the best.
Godspeed, my friend. Godspeed.
To you as well.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to like and follow us on all social media. And if you like what you hear, hit subscribe, download, and share with your friends. Thanks. Mind Body Matters is a Grape Media production.